Part 2. The Discovery of the Truth, 1848 to 1849. First narrative by Miss Clack, niece of the late Sir John Verinder. Chapter 1.
My dear parents, both now in heaven, taught me to fold my clothes carefully, to always say my prayers before going to bed, and to keep a diary. The last of these excellent habits will, I hope, enable me to be useful to a wealthy relation. Recently, Mr. Franklin Blake wrote to me here in France, where I have been forced to live for economic reasons. He asked me, with the typical lack of feeling of the rich, to reopen wounds that time has hardly closed. He offered me a small sum to write a narrative of what I witnessed while visiting Aunt Verinder in London. After much searching of my soul, I decided that it was my Christian duty to swallow my pride, accept his check, and help him. My diary tells me I was accidentally passing Aunt Verinder's house in Montague Square on July the 3rd, 1848, and felt that it would be polite to knock. The daughter of that godless old devil Betteridge answered the door. She informed me that Aunt Verinder and her daughter, I really cannot call her my cousin, had arrived a week before. I sent her upstairs to say that I didn't want to disturb them, but as I was passing, I wondered whether I could be of any use to them. When the Betteridge girl came downstairs, I decided to have a Christian word with her about the unnecessary amount of ribbons on her cap. She opened the front door before telling me, with the minimum of politeness, that I was invited to lunch tomorrow. I left. That evening we had a meeting of the Young Mothers Small Clothes Society. I was a member of the charity's committee, as was my precious and most admirable friend, Mr. Godfrey Ablewhite. To my disappointment, he did not appear that night, and I was shocked to hear from my Christian sisters of the committee that the previous Friday he and a gentleman called Mr. Septimus Luker had been victims of a strange conspiracy. According to the newspapers, early on June the 30th, our gifted Mr. Ablewhite, after cashing a cheque at a bank in Lombard Street, passed Mr. Luker, a perfect stranger, who happened to be leaving the bank at the same time. The stranger insisted on Mr. Godfrey leaving first, and the two men went their separate ways. Mr. Godfrey went back to his house in Lambeth, where a poorly dressed young boy was waiting for him. The boy handed him a letter, saying he had been asked to deliver it by an old lady he didn't know. It asked him to go, an hour later, to a house in Northumberland Street. The woman, who intended to give a large sum of money to charity, wanted information on the Young Mothers Small Clothes Society. Our Christian hero never hesitates when good can be done. He went instantly. A very respectable-looking Englishman answered the door and led him to an apartment at the back of the house. Entering, Mr. Godfrey noticed an ancient Oriental book on the table. As he was admiring it, a brown-skinned arm took him by the neck. He struggled, but there was more than one person. His eyes were bandaged, he was tied to a chair, and was searched. Words were spoken in a foreign tongue. Then the men left. He was discovered later by the owners of the house. They had rented the apartment to the Englishman the day before. Seeing that the door had been left open for a long time, they went in to see if anything was wrong. Mr. Godfrey's belongings were lying everywhere, but nothing was missing. The Oriental book was gone. Had Mr. Godfrey been the victim of a strange mistake. Later that day, the same thing happened again. Mr. Luca, having left the bank, visited various parts of London on business. Returning home, he found a letter waiting for him. A customer from Manchester, a collector of Oriental antiques, announced that he was on a short visit to London and desired to see Mr. Luca urgently about an important sale. He drove immediately to an address in Tottenham Court Road, where exactly the same thing happened to him, with one slight difference. Mr. Luca's gold watch, his wallet, nothing was missing, except one thing. A receipt for an extremely valuable object which he had put in the bank. The receipt was useless to anyone else, since it clearly stated that only Mr. Luca himself could remove the object from the bank. Mr. Luca hurried to the bank. Nobody had been there with the receipt. He went to the police, who told him about Mr. Godfrey's similar experience. They believed that a robbery had been planned, and that one of the thieves had seen Mr. Godfrey accidentally speaking to Mr. Luca. On Tuesday, dear Aunt Verinder received me with her usual kindness. However, I soon noticed that something was wrong. Anxious looks kept escaping her in the direction of her daughter, who, as usual, disappointed me. How could such a plain-looking person be the child of such fine parents? After lunch, she got up in her shamefully colourful dress and said, "I'll go and read now, Mama, but tell me if Godfrey calls. I can't wait to hear all about his adventure in Northumberland Street." She gave me a careless look. "Goodbye, Clack," she said, and left in a cloud of perfume. I refused to let her make me angry. I did what any good Christian would do. I simply decided to pray for her that night. When we were alone, my aunt told me the whole story of the Indian diamond and of Rachel's worrying behaviour. None of it surprised me. I have known Rachel since she was a child. The one thing that did shock me was Aunt Verinder's decision to have a doctor examine her. The poor girl was more in need of God's help. "This strange adventure of Godfrey's has happened at the wrong time," said my aunt. "Rachel has been restless and excited ever since she heard about it." "Dear aunt," I said, "she's obviously keeping a sinful secret from you and everybody. Something in these recent events threatens her with discovery." There was a knock on the door. Miss Cap Ribbons entered and announced a visitor, Mr. Godfrey Ablewhite.